Welcome to Peach State Prospects, the podcast that takes you inside the Atlanta Braves farm system, one level, one player, and one scouting report at a time. Today, we're diving into the 2025 MLB draft that took place last week. The Braves made some bold choices, some prep upside players, some middle infield depth, and strategic swings throughout the top 10 rounds, as well as 11 through 20. We're breaking down key picks, developmental projections, and what it tells us about the front office's approach and how these players fit into the long-term plan. With me today are Garrett Spade and our draft expert, Matt Powers. So let's go ahead and get things started. All right, let's start with how things played out from a macro perspective. Garrett, I'm going to go to you first. Did it feel like Atlanta was drafting from a place of system need, long-term depth, or just leaning into the best player available?
It was definitely, obviously you look at the approach, they went way more position player heavy this year. It definitely felt still like a typically how they approached the draft, right? They went with a guy, guys that they were kind of targeting maybe a little bit earlier in the draft. They went early. No one really slid to them. So they went to a guy that they seemed to like, that I like, and kind of went a little bit down the board so that they could spread out money. It was basically the same approach. They just went with position players this time. It kind of sounds like there was a little bit of turnover in terms of who was making the decisions there, or in terms of their scouting department and their models. And so they were able to, they've definitely been, we know they've been looking at position players for a few years now, early in the drafts. Hasn't really gone this way. This was a really good year for shortstop prospects, specifically prep shortstop prospects, and they happen to go that route. That's really where the draft seemed to fit this year. That's where the chips fell. And I think that they definitely went best player available. They definitely went best player available early in day two, and did a typically Braves job of spreading it out and getting three or four talents instead of just really sinking their entire draft into one guy.
Like you, I tend to agree with that kind of opinion. Matt, anything to add on to that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's definitely best player available on day one. I definitely had some other guys rated a little higher. I mean, I do like the guys that we drafted. I do think that money came into play to get some bigger swings on day two. I don't really think it was necessarily a drafting for the need in the system because this we did go heavy with shortstops, but this was such a shortstop heavy draft that taking one of the best players available at those picks just happened to be shortstops this year. I think it was just about building the long-term depth and getting as much talent and high-end talent and guys that you could see playing key roles, whether it's as a regular high-end utility man or even potentially an all-star in the future. So I think that was what kind of played into it this year.
I particularly like some of the later positional prospects or positional picks that the Braves went with like a Dixon Williams and Cody Miller and such. I thought that provided the system itself with a lot more high-end positional depth. And essentially, you don't know how these guys are going to end up and if they're going to end up being MLB caliber players, but we do know that those kinds of players will help on the higher end, especially when you get to double and triple A, where right now you look at those lineups and really it's kind of rough. It's Luke Waddell at that 800 OPS, and then that's pretty much it above double A. So it'd be nice to have an infuse of talent in the positional, it's just on the positional side in the upper minor leagues. Going on to our next question, and Matt, I'm gonna go to you first. Based on the profiles of who they took early, what can we kind of infer about what the Braves are prioritizing? Whether it be hit tool, athleticism, like what really stands out about the overall class?
I think overall, the thing that really stands out is hit tool. I think maybe a little bit less with maybe an Essenberg, but all the other guys project as average to above hitters. There's definitely some good athleticism throughout the draft. Some power potential is there, but the hit tool was definitely the biggest standout tool that we saw in the first 7 rounds of the draft.
Quick follow-up to that, actually, straight back to you, Matt. Do you think the likes of having someone like Isaiah Drake, the super toolsy, super raw player that has seen massive strides occur this year, do you think that maybe had a small amount of impact on going with those athletic, projectable players?
Yeah, I think a little bit, having some confidence in that. I mean, that definitely makes you feel a little bit better about your ability to develop a guy like an Essenberg, or even a guy like Miller. Some guys who are probably going to need a little bit of time, but definitely have some potential.
And then Garrett, same question to you. Based on the overall macro view of the draft, like what do you feel like the Braves really focused on this specific year?
I think especially when you're looking at some of the lower bonus guys, Williams and Miller in particular are guys that I think models favor more than traditional scouting. I think Salthazine is kind of the same in terms of they may not necessarily have the classic, body projection to a defensive home as you typically see in the top picks, but they're guys that there's more underneath the surface there. There's more power than you kind of may think there is at first. So I think that overall it's again, they obviously love athleticism, but I don't know, that it's, on the pitcher side as typically athletic as they go. They typically are very much focused on athleticism, but they also didn't get as many pitchers this year early in the draft as they typically do. So I think it's the athleticism. Really, their models this year were, kind of focused on, again, where it is a lot of times, premium positions, guys that have power and maybe more power than you expect from some of those guys. And again, like Matt said, they always favor on base skill. That's kind of something that they look at and focus on is can a guy get to contact? Is there something we can work with from a makeup perspective in terms of developing the approach and giving these guys a high on base numbers with, enough power to hit at the major to actually make an impact at the major league level?
Kind of building on that, and Garrett, you first. You said earlier that the Braves did a good job of kind of managing the money and having money given to multiple players. But when you look at the overall draft signing bonuses, you have Tate Southesine at 2.6 million, you got Alex Otis at 1.3, you got Briggs McKenzie at 3 million, and then you got Connor Essenberg at 1.2. So those are your main kind of sticking points for this draft and who the Braves are really trying to focus on and build around. There's risk, in any draft strategy, but there is risk in leveraging a strategy the way that the Braves did, which was going, pretty significantly big on those four players, and then kind of going with higher signability guys later in the draft. What are your overall thoughts on how the draft played out, especially knowing, and this is the power of 2020 vision, but especially knowing that the Braves were able to sign both Briggs and Connor?
Yeah, I think overall, again, there wasn't really anybody at that 22 spot that I like significantly more than Salthazine in a way that I look at that and go, oh, they should have just given a guy big money. I think that it was a good position to kind of spread out the money early. It's for me, I think it kind of depends on how you see the McKenzie pick. And we're going to get to McKenzie later and I'll kind of talk about him more there. But 3 million on one player, especially that late, that's a lot of money. So you're putting a lot of risk in a prep arm with a lot of projection. And, I think that if you're looking at a pick, that's kind of the one that is going to divide this draft, right? Where people are either going to really like McKenzie or they're going to say, okay, you spent 3 million on a guy that other teams didn't see as a first round pick. But overall, I think that they got four guys, especially those big bonus guys that I really like. So looking at it with hindsight, I really think they did a good job. I think the Lotisy pick, especially going under that much under slot there, was a fantastic pick. I really like Essenberg there. The way I would, what we typically see with the Braves is their overslots are kind of in the Essenberg range where you're getting 800 to 1.2 on guys. Maybe, I like McKenzie, maybe I would have preferred to see them really go with two, three guys in the 1 million range, spread out the money a little bit more. That's what they've done in the past, and that's worked for them. I think that there's a lot of risk going 3 million on McKenzie, but I do like McKenzie. And I think that the way that they approached, day one isn't necessarily the most exciting, but I think that the way that they approached it to give themselves a lot of players on day two was good. And I also think you have to consider that condensing the draft from 3 days to two definitely plays in how you're able to spread out your money. You're not able to make those calls between rounds two and three now. You're not able to make those calls between rounds 10 and 11. So it definitely makes it more difficult for teams to kind of know what they have available. And given how the draft board shaped up this year, I think that getting McKenzie with that day two pick, it ended up making their strategy on day one look really, really good. And there would have been more players available. It wasn't just McKenzie sitting on the board at that time. So it definitely worked out for them in a good way.
I really like how you layered in that added layer of it, of the draft going from 3 days to two and not having that extra day to really think about overall strategy. The way I spoke on, I was on Grant McAuley's From the Diamond just a couple of days ago, and the way I kind of referred to Briggs McKenzie and that signing bonus was essentially the, you could tell the Braves view him as a day one type of player, as a round one type of talent. In 3 years, coming out as a junior, you're looking at a signing bonus closer to 11 to 12 million, right? So like, in the grand scheme of things, it's really abstract of me to say this, but like in the grand scheme of things, it's almost like a $8 million savings if Briggs, does develop the way that it kind of seems like he will based on his arm talent and things like that. But Matt, same question to you. What did you think of the overall strategy that the Braves leveraged, and what were your overall thoughts on how it played out?
Well, I'm a fan of the draft. I mean, my biggest complaint, my one single complaint about this draft is I didn't think they drafted enough upside guys in rounds 11 through 20. I think even though they didn't really have money to do much, guys like Cole Raymond, prep arm, signed for 150,000, Craylott, JUCO batter, undrafted free agent. Those are guys the Braves could have afforded, but did not. I mean, it does help a little that they added some upside-y undrafted free agents in Guerrero and Merritt, we'll talk about a little later. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more upside. But the overall early strategy, I was a big fan of that and just using the money to get basically four first-round picks.
Or first round picks. Matt Powers, actually, right back to you. Were there any clear high risk, high upside picks? And you don't have to just talk about day one. Let's dig into where you excel rounds 11 through 20. And then what does that say about the about how they actually value projection versus, polish right now?
I think there's a few of those. I think two of the earlier picks that are high risk, high upside are Essenberg. Obviously, he is considered by quite a few people and teams as a better pitcher than hitter. Two-way guy, had to buy him out of playing both ways at Kentucky. Is he going to actually hit enough as he spends more time focused on being a hitter? I do believe in what I've seen with him, but there's definitely some risk there. A guy like Miller, who really didn't emerge at all until this year and really only started to emerge in the Cape after his season ended. I mean, he was good in his couple games against Power Four teams this year. I think he had three or four of his home runs against Power Four, and that included like the Tennessees and Georgias. But as he gets used to playing that heavier competition, that's going to be a little bit of a risk reward pick right there, even though he wasn't a big bonus guy. And I think as you start to look later, taking a kid like Logan Forsyth, who has day one, two stuff, but such huge command issues, that's either going to really work out or he may never even reach double A. So risk reward and guys like those.
And Gary, same question for you.
Yeah, I think basically any of the interesting picks in this draft are, high risk, high reward. You definitely, even looking at some of the college players, and they've done this in the past, they didn't spend a ton of money in the college ranks this year outside of Lowdice, but the Braves in the past, even when targeting college guys, they're targeting guys that, other than some of their day two picks, sometimes usually they're usually targeting guys that have more work than you tend to see in college guys. A guy like Hurston Waldrop had a lot of work coming out that they needed to do with him to get him to major league quality. So the draft and generally how the Braves approach it is they're really looking at the upside with players. And this draft, you look in that, those entire top six picks, there's work. Dixon Williams is maybe the one guy that you look at and you say, okay, that's a pretty, very safe pick. You can kind of feel like there's a floor there that's easier to predict. But with the rest of the guys, there's work to do on approaches, on command, on, their pitch mix. And I think that the Braves really focused on that. There's even a guy, eighth round, we'll talk about these guys later, Carter Lovash, that is, a guy that I think that there's more ceiling there than you may kind of see based on the raw numbers. And so overall, I think that they really focused on, if they're gonna only spend 150 on a guy, let's not get a guy that's probably organizational. Let's get a guy with a little bit more of an upside. And he probably won't even be successful up till double A, but it's worth that risk. So I think really top to bottom, obviously the big swings, the prep swings, those guys are guys that need a lot that are projection over that are upside over floor. But I think that really throughout the draft, there's not a ton of guys in day two that are as interesting. Typically, day two is a little bit stronger, but even the guys that they got are guys that you kind of hope they can maybe unlock little tools here and there to, push them to the next level.
As of like really lately, the Braves have, to me, have done a good job of being able to kind of work around those high upside prep players. We've seen Eric Hartman do well this season, Owen Carey do well. We've seen massive strides by Isaiah Drake. These are all kind of lottery tickets where you don't know what's going to happen because it may be that are not your day one, round one, pick one talents, but you see so much projection in them, and then you just turn it over to your player projection or your player development system and let them do their thing. And right now we are seeing a lot of the positional talent being in the low minors with those prep picks. So there is a lot to be excited about when it comes to some of these prep guys, because the Braves have done a good job again as of late of really having a plan for each one and letting them actually express who they are as individuals and really shine. You're even seeing Colby Jones, while he's got like a 600 OPS, he's got 50 stolen bases right coming right out of the All-Star break. So just it's been interesting to see the development this year, and I think the Braves have actually done a really good job in the lower minors of taking really high-end wild card talents and then having a plan in place for them and having them work on things, and you're seeing that really pay off this season. And Gary, I want to go back to you, and you kind of touched on this earlier with I think it was question number two, but did this draft reflect any kind of shift in Braves philosophy, whether it be more athleticism? We went with a few two-way players, but playing them in one position, or any more emphasis on metrics themselves and evaluation.
I don't know if it's going to reflect a long-term shift. Again, I think it was kind of what was available, especially in the first round. This was a shortstop-heavy draft. That's where they went. And we know from what we've heard that they've been looking at prep shortstops for a few years now. So this is not like they're suddenly like, oh, prep shortstop, that's the way we're going moving forward. We want all prep hitters. In the past, they've given guys like Isaiah Drake big bonuses in the second round. So, or in the later round. So a guy like Essenberg getting a bonus like that, not that surprising. I don't know if it's necessarily a complete shift in their strategy. Like I said, there was definitely some turnover in this, in that department. So I think that I think it was mostly on the side of working with the models. So I definitely think there's something different with the models that they're using. It's just, I mean, that's information we don't have access to, right? That's such a proprietary thing that we're not going to know exactly what their decisions make. And obviously, it turned into a different result on paper than we typically see, whether that was how the draft shaped up. I think it was more how the draft shaped up than it was necessarily some grand change in philosophy. But I do think that they probably are going to be more position player heavy moving forward, simply because they're not. They've invested, and I think it goes into, they invested a lot into international guys that haven't worked out so far. And now they're kind of going, okay, there has to be position player talent in this system. We were expecting these international guys to do well. They haven't really done well. We've got to get guys into the system. And so there's definitely, I think, going to be more of a focus on position players, but especially at the top of the draft, it's really just for the Braves, it's really just, who do the models say is good and who's available? Who can we afford? And this year it was a lot more position players than in the past.
Matt, same question for you.
I have to agree. It's tough to really say there's any kind of a change, even though there are more hitters, because just like Garrett said, we know they wanted to draft some hitters high in recent years. It didn't quite work out. And they did spend some money on guys like Drake and Nick Montgomery as prep guys in early rounds. I think it's a little hard to say any kind of short term or long term anything there, even though it is a little different on face value. I think the biggest shift, if anything, was just the way they spent their money more than the types of players. I think focusing in on just that small group of early players instead of spreading it out is really the first time we've seen much of that since the Kyle Wright Drew Waters draft. And I mean, that was obviously even more spread out to just a couple of players than even this year's was, but I'm just so used to seeing some overslot picks in rounds 11 through 20, even if the first 10 rounds money-wise played out pretty normal.
It was pretty funny during the draft itself when you and I were, it was really the three of us were talking, and we're thinking the Braves have enough money to potentially add another, 150 to $250,000 signing later in the rounds. But then as each pick came in, fourth year, fourth year, fourth year, you're like, oh, well, obviously Connor Essenberg and Briggs McKenzie are going to be very, very expensive. Thank you two for that. We talked about the draft from a macro point of view. Now let's focus in more on the actual draft picks themselves. And let's go ahead and start at the top. The Braves took prep shortstop Tate Southesine in the first round and signed him for right around $2.6 million. Matt Powers, going to you first. What are some things that really stand out to you about Tate's game?
Obviously, he's got a great feel for hitting, good speed, great bloodlines. He's got emerging power that really played at the combine. He's just a really good, well-rounded player. He wasn't the highest rated guy on the board, probably because the hit tool is more of a 55 potential with more of 50 grade power, maybe 55 he could grow into. So they're not quite true plus tools, but he can really play, doesn't really have any true holes in his game, even if he can't stick at shortstop. Center field is very much an option for him with his speed. I mean, a guy that I wrote up a full month ago ahead of the draft, as in a guy that fit a candidate for the Braves. The Braves weren't the only team in the mid to later part of the first round that was looking at him as their first round pick. So it was just a very solid pick.
Garrett, what about Tate stood out to you?
I think you're looking at him and you're looking at a guy that, like I said earlier, there's a little bit more than you kind of look at a guy that's smaller, and sometimes scouts can underrate those guys. I think that there's more strength. He's a guy that you don't look at him, he doesn't look like he's necessarily that physical, but he's a lot stronger than he looks. And what really impressed me was, the athleticism and how well he controls himself, even though he has a bigger swing, a lot of moving parts in his swing. He's very quiet with his hands. It's a very direct swing. And so you're looking at a guy that just has the athletic traits to be a successful, middle infielder, center fielder, or whichever it is. And, they were able to get a guy that I really don't think is talent-wise that far below some of the guys that went ahead of him and got millions more on their signing bonuses. I think it was a solid pick, not the most exciting, right? It's kind of, it's a good pick. It's a solid pick there. And, the money that they were able to save was good. And I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be, because he kind of has a really good feel for hitting, and because the Braves have done such a good job developing hitters lately at the lower levels. We talk about international guys, but in terms of developing the approach for guys, really tapping into power, they've done a good job of that lately, and I think that South Asin is a guy that's really going to benefit from being in that system.
Would it be fair, and either one of you answer whenever you want, would it be fair to say that Tate kind of, for a prep player especially, kind of has a higher floor than most prep players? It just seems like there's always tons of risk with going with a high schooler, but it seems like his feel for hitting, like you said, his swing, his approach, his overall calmness right before the pitch is coming, like it's funky at the start, but then he's completely locked in and ready to go. Would you say that he maybe is one of the safer prep picks?
I would, yeah. I think he's just so well-rounded, has that fallback option defensively where if shortstop doesn't work for him, you're not just going to have to throw him at second base. I mean, that's also an option, but you have all that working in his favor that even though he doesn't have the true plus tools, he's got a little bit of everything and just great feel for the game of baseball as well. So he definitely seems like one of the higher floor preps.
Yeah, and more
Well,
to Matt's point about the defense, like a guy that can play second, short, center field, a guy like that, you look at it, even if he does take 3 to 4 years, you'll get 3 or 4 years down the road. No matter what the Braves need from him, he's sh going to have the physical tool set to do that. So that gives him a lot of that, having that versatility and the ability to kind of plug and play him helps a lot in terms of helping him fit in the system and being able to really look at him as a guy that can, no matter how the future of the franchise goes, you can really project him as a player the Braves can use.
when Ronit Shah was taking questions from the media following day one, one of the things he said about Tate and why he was so intriguing was that ability to play so many different positions. You can, like Garrett said, if need be, if he's not quite working out a short, or if you just have a positional need at center, like that's something that Tate can do because he is that kind of premium athlete, which is really cool to see. Some like being able to say something like that about an 18-year-old, that's just not what you typically are able to. It's you're going to be, can he handle the position or does he have to move to a corner outfield spot? So being able to have that kind of added versatility is very, very valuable. And then you add on to that with what these two agree with on me with, which is he's got a bit of a higher floor for a player. Like it's a safe pick, it's a safe prep pick, but there's also that really high-end potential. And so I think all three of us agree that the Braves did well in with pick one. But then we move on later into the draft. Well, still day one, but sandwiched in between those two big prep picks in Connor Essenberg and Briggs McKenzie were two more shortstops, Alex Lodes from Florida State University and Cody Miller out of East Tennessee State's, both shortstops with very, very different skill sets. Matt, I want to hear from you first. What kind of offensive profile do you see from both Lodis and Miller?
Well, Lodis is more power over hit. I'm thinking he ends up big league level, maybe 240 hitter with 20 plus homers. Miller is a bit tougher to project because he comes from the small school, limited track record with the power since it didn't come on until this year, and he also played in the smaller conference. So we really have a 10 game sample against Power Four plus the Cape. I think he's got higher upside than Lodis if he can continue with the plus hitting potential and as well as the emerging power that he showed this year and that plus speed. But there's probably going to be an adjustment period on him. I think he's got some all-star upside to him, even if it's a small percentage. But a guy who has shown his speed, feel for hitting, and power, that's definitely got an intriguing potential. What he'll actually be is really hard to figure out, but luckily with the bonus that he was given, it's really not that big of a risk either.
He's like such an interesting player. I had to do a ton of research following draft because he was not on my draft board. I honestly didn't know who he was had to get my first interpretation of him, some Matt Powers, to figure out exactly what I need to focus on. He does have that really intriguing upside where right now I want to say he's got like a 50 power when you saw the big switch into this year, and then he's got 70 speed. If he's able to hit, and at East Tennessee, I believe it was, he had an 8% whiff rate. Like, I don't expect that kind of number against premium pitching. He's playing in a much smaller conference versus the Power Four, so like you imagine those whiff rates would go up. But if it's even somewhere in that realm, and he's making that much content, or content, that much contact with that much speed, and then power potential, while also being able to shift between center, second, and center field, like it's a really, really interesting player. I do kind of disagree with you on Alex. I think his hit tool is a little better than that. I do see more of a 250, 250, 255, 260 hitter. And with his power, I think that's really nice out of short. But Garrett, let's hear from you. What kind of offensive profile do you see from those two?
Yeah, I think it was a. I agree with both of you. Kind of, I think Lodisia's ceiling is maybe closer, like you said, to more of a 250, 255 guy. But, I know, speaking specifically from the Braves perspective, I know Miller was a guy that their models liked a lot. That's what I've heard about him, is the models really, really liked Miller. Getting him for, 300K with a signing bonus, I'm happy with that pick. It's a little bit riskier, but for only 300K, I really think you're getting a versatile defender, a guy with athleticism, a guy with that could really hit first power at the next level, assuming that it carries over from his last year in college. So I really like that pick. Lodis, the thing with him is the biggest question with the hit tools is approach, right? He tends to chase out of the zone. The Braves in the past few years, you can criticize, again, their international guys. They haven't developed. Some of that's been physical setbacks, whatever it is. They have done a very good job, especially, that crew that Winston Sawyer has in Augusta. They have done a fantastic job of developing the approach for guys. You look at Drake Baldwin's taking a step forward. You look at David McCabe took a step forward, and those are college guys taking steps forward in terms of their approach. And then you look at their team just right now. Even Luis Guanipa's taking a step forward. Isaiah Drake's taking a step forward. Guys that have gone from questionable approaches, tons of chases out as well. The college guys were better. The Baldwin and McCabe were definitely better. But you look at those prep guys, those were guys that were taking really bad swings. And within a year, the staff and what the Braves have done with that, with their development program has really taken all of those guys to guys that are significantly better contact numbers, significantly better walk numbers, significantly better chase rates. I think Lodis is a guy that fits what the Braves are doing right now, where he has the bare enough of a feel for barrel. He has the power. He's probably going to stick it short. Really, the question mark is, can he go to a team that's going to be able to unlock the approach? And I think the Braves are a very good fit. Now, I don't know if they're necessarily going to start him out in Augusta, but I know that that's something that they're working on really at every level. You're seeing, Ambiar Oristarvez has a better approach at Rome this year. So what they're doing philosophically with their hitters, I really think it's going to benefit Lodis a lot. And so I think that this is a team that can unlock, the ceiling for Lodis better than some others might be able to.
You basically took exactly what I had for this question myself, and that was the Braves have done a really good job with approaches. And when that's the main wild card for Alex, I like the chances of him being, like you said, being able to sit down with Ruben Gotay, talk, really across the organization. But like I agree with you with the Augusta staff. They have done such an incredible job this season. Love to be able to see him with Garrett Wilkinson, Ruben Gotay, work on that approach, cut down that aggressiveness at the plate. Because if he's not swinging and out of the zone as often as he is, like that contact rate should go up significantly. And he, but I just, yeah, I totally agree with you. But now we had another question for these two. The Braves have been difficult enough to watch. So actually, let's just talk about high-end ceiling. If you had to sum it up in, a couple of sentences, Matt, what is the ceiling for both Alex Lodis and Cody Miller? And if possible, can you give a potential comp to that?
So, Lodis is probably the ceiling, above average, everyday, regular, shortstop, I think. Floor, probably high-end utility guy who has some versatility, bat first guy. maybe like a Zobrist type of player, a little bit more power, a little less
Ooh.
Zobrist, but I think probably less versatility than a Zobrist, but bat first utility guy that you play more than the typical utility guy. I think that's kind of where you're going with him. Miller is a little tougher, I think. Obviously, he's got some all-star potential, but he's already pretty close to physically maxed out, so there's not really more projection coming. It's more if the Braves can tap into more of the raw power that's already there and have his good bat to ball skills get a little bit more power at launch angle as well out of it, which he's already grown at a little bit this year. But it's hard to really project more than that for him. I think obviously the floor on him is not even reaching double A. Definitely a true wild card of a pick. But I think that comp for him might be like a Trey Turner. Like, obviously, Trey Turner. But I mean, that kind of speed with actual power and ability to hit the ball while having a chance to stick at shortstop, even though he probably isn't best there long term. Center field is probably where they want him, which is probably where he'd look best. And I think that's where they announced him at. But same thing for Trey. I think they kind of have fairly similar enough skill sets.
Yeah, the more I dug into Cody Miller, the more I was like, okay, what can actually happen with this guy? If his hit tool is there, we're talking about a really supreme draft pick, 55 hit tool, 70 speed, 55 power, like a 70 arm. He's able to play a great defensive center field while also hitting for power. And like, there's a lot to like about him. Of course, a lot of it's just pure projection. We don't know how he will hold up against higher quality players. But Garrett, also, let's hear from you. What do you think the ceiling for those two players are?
Yep. I mean, I think you're looking at, again, like I said, I mean, Miller, I think Matt pretty much hit it. I can't really add much to what Matt said there. Lodis is a guy that I think could be a solid starter, maybe, kind of a, first division type starter, kind of on that border between first and second division. I don't know that he's necessarily the type that you're looking at, centerpiece type player at shortstop, but he's got a good all or he's got enough. He's got the power. He's a good enough defender. I think he could be a solid shortstop as a starter. Miller has a little bit more of a ceiling, especially if he sticks at short. If they do play him at short and he sticks at short, either short or center field, really, he has the speed really to give him more of a ceiling defensively. So you may look at him as kind of a higher end starter type, but again, both of them are, solid starters. I don't know if they have that. The power level to really look at them as kind of, again, organizational cornerstones, but solid starters that they're add a lot more depth in terms of ceiling projection to the system, where there's really not a lot of guys that right now that project to starters at the major league level.
Moving on from that, we talked. I talked about the two prep players selected in between those guys. A lot of the strategy was built around taking Briggs McKenzie and Connor Essenberg. Starting with Briggs, and Gary, I want to hear from you first. What really stands out about him, and how does he project in your mind?
Yeah, so the Briggs pick, $3 million on a prep guy, they obviously like him to give him that sort of money. And you look, that's a very risky pick on a young player, right? These guys get hurt a lot. And with McKenzie, there was a lot of questions about his velocity. It kind of fluctuated a lot throughout the season. And there were times where his velocity was not even at a playable level, and then it were other times he was touching 95. It's a similar kind of situation. Now, Richie was better at the same age in terms of his velocity. He was touching 99, but J.R. Richie, when he came out of high school, same questions were, is he going to be able to maintain his velocity deep into starts? And early on, he really wasn't able to do that. So, but there's a thing where, at this level, these guys are not getting strength and conditioning. Oh, at the level that they're going to get the major level, especially these prep guys, they're just not getting ideal strength and conditioning. So that's not really a concern with me. when I look at McKenzie, what I see is a guy that can really spin the ball well. So I think that their focus early on is going to be they're going to have him throw a slider. They typically don't go curveball as a primary off breaking ball for their pitchers. So I think they're going to have him add a slider. That's a guy that has a feel for incredible feel for spin. He's really high spin rate curveball. And I think that even if they don't have him add weight necessarily, because there is room to add weight there, but I don't think he needs to. I think he's a guy that he's very loose. He's very flexible. He's a guy where most of his velocity is going to come from his mechanics. He doesn't get down the, he doesn't extend and get down the mound at an elite level where his flexibility, he has the flexibility and the athleticism where, if you make changes like they made to AJ Smith-Shawver, you look at what they did with AJ Smith-Shawver, last year. He added, 2 miles per hour to his average fastball just by them having him drive better down the mound and really, maximize what he was doing with his legs. I think McKenzie could benefit from that. And I also think that his hip shoulder separation isn't ideal. I think he's a little bit too close together on the timing with opening his shoulders up in comparison to his hips. So I think that those two changes, I think mechanically, there's just mechanically, there's 2 to 3 miles per hour in him right now with where he is from his flexibility, his arm speed. And so I think that there's more velocity that's going to come fairly quickly. Now, this is a process that takes years, right? It takes, 2 to 3 years. You don't want to have a guy come in and you suddenly change everything. They're going to take their time with him, develop him physically, but I think that it's not as I'm not as I think there's more velocity and it's going to come a lot easier than you think without adding a ton of weight to his body and really having to necessarily maybe sacrifice some of that athleticism and some of that ability to move that really makes him project well in terms of his command. So I think that he's a guy that could very, very quickly add velocity simply off of his mechanical changes. And so looking at McKenzie, watching the tape for him, I like the pick a lot. I think that the biggest question mark is something that the Braves are, they've done a good job at developing these prep guys and getting velocity out of them. You look at a guy like Raven Antonio, they've done a similar thing to him this year. He's now sitting mid 90s where he was low 90s last year. They've been able to look at guys mechanically and figure out what they're doing wrong to get more velocity out of him. And I think McKenzie is a guy that his mechanics are, they're not, he doesn't have bad mechanics in terms of he commands the ball well, he repeats well. It's just holding him back a little bit. And once he adds more power, you're going to be looking at a guy that has, average velocity, maybe a little bit above average velocity with once he adds a little bit more power to his breaking ball, it's going to go from a pitch that's, solid with its spin, but doesn't produce a ton of whiffs just because of how much slower it is. It's below 80 miles per hour right now. Once you add a little bit more velocity to that, maybe add a slider to the mix, that's going to be a guy that really has the potential for a couple of plus breaking balls with, average to above average velocity and, above average command. I really like this pick. It's a risk. It's a lot of money on a prep pitcher, but I think that McKenzie has the physical tool set to be perfect for the Braves development program.
It's a lot of really good stuff and really nice things to say about Briggs McKenzie. I'm really glad I don't have to go after you. Matt, you're up. And you top Garrett.
I disagree with the adding weight. I think he does need to add 10 to 15 pounds for the velocity, not just in terms of adding more velocity. I think being able to hold his velocity, as well as adding more power to the breaking ball, I think that was definitely a concern with him this year. Why it played down at times, especially as the season went on for him. But I do agree that you want to keep him athletic. I think that comp of Mackenzie Gore of both where they came from, how they kind of blew up a little bit more senior year, what he could become as a big league pitcher, lefty from North Carolina, drafted high, given a big bonus. But I think that's kind of what you're hoping for with him. I think he's got a fairly high floor for a prep pitcher, because he has three average or above pitches. He has decent command. You've got that middle of the rotation potential with him. with the potential that it ends up turning into a potential top of the rotation starter if everything really, really works out well for him. So there's definitely a lot to like with him, and it's kind of telling that the Braves chose to spend their money on him because really, when you look at this draft, anyone outside of the top part of the second round, the prep player wise, the Braves could have afforded to buy them down. With the possible exception of Jack Bauer, because I heard his bonus numbers and they were a bit higher than what McKenzie ended up getting, quite a bit higher. So I don't think they could have afforded him, but I think they chose him over anyone else.
Now we shift to the other prep player, and Matt, right back to you again. The other significant seven-figure prep player selected by the Braves was Connor Essenberg, someone that you told me about quite a bit ago. What is Connor's calling card, and how does he project to you?
I'm a big fan. Obviously, I think the power is the biggest thing with him, but two-way guy, and he still has a lot of room to grow as a hitter at this point. But he did show not only athleticism, but the feel for hitting and the ability to go up against elite velocity this year when he went up against Jack Bauer, the 103 mile an hour fastball kid that everyone talks about, and he hit a 99 mile an hour fastball for an opposite field home run. So if you're able to do that already in high school, you're showing that you have no problems with big velocity. So that's one concern that a lot of guys that struggle with the hit tool at the high school level have not good enough against the velocity. I mean, he does have other things he needs to work on, probably just refining the hit tool overall, which is to be expected, considering he spent that much time focusing on pitching, especially since a good amount of teams did prefer him as a pitcher. It's just that he prefers hitting if he's not going to go both ways. So, I mean, he even at the combine high school All-American game was a pitcher as well in that game. So that just shows you where some of his value is. But there's a lot to like with him. I think he could have a 45 hit, which I think could even grow into a 50 because with that extra, like a blank canvas that you have to work with potentially plus power and big arm, like he's a prototypical right fielder, may slow down, may have to move to left or even first at some point. But I think at least, depending on how much weight he adds, obviously, but I think at least at this point, you definitely see the prototypical power hitting big arm right fielder.
It'd be wild imagining just trying to fathom having to move to left because of size. Like at that point, I wonder what his power potential would be if he's getting that big. He's got to move over to left. Garrett, same question for you. What about Connor Essenberg really stands out to you, and how do you project? How does he project to you?
I really like this pick. I like it a lot. It might be my favorite pick in the entire draft. It's just there's a ton of power, the ability to play outfield. I really love Essenberg, and I think that I like his swing. He creates a lot of depth. He's a guy that's going to get to his power early in terms of the way he swings. He's swinging with intent. He's swinging looking to drive the ball. That's something that you sometimes don't see with these prep guys. A lot of them hit the ball on the ground too much. I don't think that's going to be an issue with Essenberg. And I think, like I said with Lodis, this is a guy that he's going to go to Augusta more than likely next year, and that's the perfect environment for him. Get them working on his approach. If they can get him drawing a lot of walks and making good swing decisions, the power is going to come. And if he's able to, there's probably going to be some swing and miss in his game, just in terms of the intent he swings with, the depth of his swing. There's going to be some swing and miss. You make that sacrifice to hit for the power that he does. But a ton of power. If he draws enough walks to get on base at a high clip, that's a guy that has, again, middle of the order potential. And getting that guy in the fifth round, that's a great pick. I think the bonus is fair. I really love this pick. It's one of my favorite preps that they've drafted. It might be the fa my favorite prep that they've drafted in the last 3 or 4 years, other than obviously they got South to seem pretty high this year. But compared to the guys that they've gotten in the last three or four drafts in the past, he might be my favorite prep player that they've drafted. And I really like this pick a ton. I think he's going to be a guy that hits for power. And I think, again, it's a great system for him where he's going to go to Augusta, probably spend the whole year there. And that team's going to, and that coaching staff is going to have a, fantastic base of talent to work with.
A lot like last year, I was a huge fan of the Nick Montgomery draft pick. For Connor Essenberg, I agree with the two of you, is one of my favorite draft picks, one of my favorite prep picks that the Braves have selected in recent memory, just because of that enormous power upside and the kind of player he can be. Very, very cool. We have talked, I mean, we're almost at an hour. We've talked a lot about the first four picks, but anyone that is listening to us is a true sicko. And as such, we need to go into true sicko mode. And I'm gonna really hone in on you, Matt Powers, here for this one. Let's go through everyone outside of those top four, and I want you to tell me what their what their true calling card is, and how they could potentially develop it to the majors. But very quickly, let's keep it to like a sentence or below. All right, you ready to do this?
Okay, I can do this.
All right, let's start
Right.
off. Let's start off at the fourth comp pick, which was Dixon Williams at East Carolina.
Power, athleticism, still newer to full-time baseball. Really big fan.
All right, let's skip to the sixth round. It's Landon, oof, Beadlesky, maybe. I'm so sorry, Arkansas fans. What about him?
Bedelshies.
Bedelsky. All
Slider
right, there we go.
combo with SEC success, has some starter potential, but could be a dominant lefty reliever.
Bedelsky's, someone on Twitter told me his nickname and over at Arkansas is Cheese. Seventh
Yes.
round pick is Zach Royce.
Sinker slider reliever, big slider, fastball is up to 97.
Eighth round pick, Garrett talked about him, Carter Lovaz out of William and Mary.
A guy that has a really, really big slider, misses lots of bats with that. Career reliever, really struggled with his command this year after previously having command, but good.
What was that last part? Good what?
Reliever potential.
Ninth round pick, Logan Braunschweig out of UAB.
Hit tool and speed guy.
He's very intriguing to me. 10th round pick, Cade Woods out of LSU.
Huge, huge stuff. Just no luck with health over the last few years. Basically, no innings, but going to be interesting to see what they can do with that fastball slider combo if he stays healthy.
Signed for 2,500 with enormous upside. 11th round pick, Colin Daniel out of UAB.
Great record of success this year, but he's a pitchability command starter.
12th round pick, Jay Woolfolk out of U out of University of Virginia.
Was a top recruit, but played two sports, actually had a significant amount of time in a Notre Dame football game, at quarterback. Was great his first 2 years as a reliever, struggled in as a starter, four pitch mix, but probably best as a reliever.
13th round pick, Logan Forsythe out of Louisiana Tech.
Huge stuff, huge stuff. Just very little command. I mean, a Mississippi State transfer previously. Gonna be a question if they can harness his stuff.
Gary, I think you were a fan of this next one. 14th round pick, Mathieu Curtis out of Virginia Tech.
Me? Oh, he was not one of the ones that I was going to talk about.
Well,
Go
that's
back to that.
okay
I'm
then, Matt.
missing.
Let's hear from you. It's all good. I got that wrong. I thought I remember you talking about him.
Now, he's another interesting reliever, just transferred in there this year.
15th round pick, Dallas Macias out of Oregon State.
A guy who had a huge year, well, big year in 2024, just never really got going this year, lost playing time, but interesting buy low candidate.
16th round pick, Nico Wagner, West Valley College.
A guy who actually transferred down from D1. Projectable arm with a lot of upside to still learn.
17th round pick, Brody Fowler, North Greenville University.
Projectable small school arm without a ton of experience yet after missing 2024.
18th round pick, Avin Cabral out of Northeastern. Cabral? Cabral.
Yeah, Cabral. Obviously, the big thing about him is he's coached by Tom Glavine's brother, but he's more of a pitchability command guy who has more mediocre stuff. Solid college starter, probably more of a reliever as a pro.
This 19th round pick, everyone, is the first time I've ever heard Matt Power say, "I don't know who this player is." At this point of reporting, I'm sure you know everything about him. So if you want to say more than one sentence, feel free to. 19th round pick, Ryan Heppner out of University of British Columbia.
Gotten some glowing reports on him, actually. He is high upside compared to what I was thinking initially. Not even fully filled in yet, but he's got some stuff already. Definitely has a lot of room to learn. A kid that's going to really, really work hard. Great kid. But the stuff that I've heard on him just makes me very hopeful that he's something that the Braves can work as he's already low 90s and has four pitches.
Oh, 90s, four pitches. That'll do. And then finally, 20th round pick Hayden Freeze, Western Carolina.
I think he's a bit more of a guy with some untapped power potential. If they can tap into that a little bit more, he could end up being a bit of a steal in the 20th round.
Well done, Matt. Let's give Matt, a little breathing, time. Garrett, I want to hear from you first. Give us a pair of picks from rounds 11 through 20 that really stuck out to you and why.
Logan Forsyth is a guy I like. I think that there's a ton of potential in that arm. Again, he struggled as this year, but I think that's a ton of potential. That's a guy that the Braves tend to be willing to take a picks on, those guys that have a lot of stuff, maybe don't have the command. They've been willing to take those picks, so he's a guy that I like. Nico Wagner was the other one that stood out to me in terms of the ability to project him to being a better player. And again, the Braves system in terms of taking those projectable college arms. He's a player that I think could really fill out, add velocity. That's a player I like. I also want to go back to the eighth round. If we can expand just a little bit, Carter Lobash, the stuff, he's, upper 80s into the low 90s as a pitcher, which as a right-handed starter, which is not impressive, but really low release angle. And that's one thing that I want to point out with him is that that's something that the Braves have really targeted in the last few years, especially in those kind of later rounds or undrafted free agents, guys with really low release angles, great slider, already throws a changeup. And I think that there's more room for him to add a little bit of velocity. If he can get that 89 to 91, up to 91 to 93, that's a guy that I think could actually fit. I don't know if the command's going to fit as a starter, but given how low that release angle is, how that allows his fastball to play up at the top of the zone, how many swings and misses he gets on that breaking ball, I think Lobash is a guy that for a 75 for a senior sign, $7,500, I think that's a really good pick, and a guy that I think fits what the Braves have done over the past few years in terms of targeting guys where the models play a little bit better than the numbers did in college.
Matt, let's hear from you.
I think we did already hear from me on these guys, but
Well, give us two that really stand out to you, and what specifically about them makes you really interested.
I'd say the two that stand out to me the most would probably be Forsyth, just because the stuff is so big that if he can harness the command, he would be a huge steal at this point of the draft. And the next one I'd probably have to say would be Woelfolk. I mean, top recruit, two-sport athlete, did have really good success in the bullpen at Virginia, which is obviously a top school. Just struggled as a starter. I think putting him back into the bullpen might help get the most out of him and bring back what we saw his first 2 years on campus.
Yeah, I was gonna go with Jay as well. Fastball in the upper 90s, good slider, okay changeup. I can see him, especially if he shifts to that reliever role, I can see him really skyrocketing through the organization real quick and finding himself in Atlanta a lot sooner than later. Well, that covers all 20 rounds of the MLB draft, but that does not end the show. We're gonna shift gears and we're gonna talk about some undrafted free agents. We won't go really deep on all of them, but let's just talk highlights. And Matt, we're gonna really lean heavy on you here because you do such a good job at being able to identify these kinds of players as well. Do any of these undrafted free agents stand out from a tools or analytics standpoint?
Yeah, I think a lot of them do. I think two of the high school players, especially Caden Merritt, he's got some speed and some power as well as some on-base potential if he can really work things out. Was going to go to Coastal Carolina, but Braves were able to talk him into signing. He went to the MLB Draft League and had a very rough go of it, including the Draft League versus Cape Cod All-Star game. At least at the point when he signed, he had 26 strikeouts in 50 plate appearances, which is not good. Obviously, playing against older kids as a high schooler against 21, 22-year-olds. So it was a tough spot for him to be put in, and he struggled a bit there, but he did show some flashes. The recent signing over the weekend, Yanvier Carrero, the Puerto Rican shortstop, power potential with the ability to stick at short, though he's far away. Typically, what you see with those Puerto Rican shortstops, they're raw. They need to add some weight. They need to develop their hit tool. Might be 2 years away from actually getting somewhere in the minor leagues. But he's a guy that I thought should have been drafted. And once he signed as an undrafted free agent, I was surprised. Daniel Brooks has a big arm with some good traits. Eldridge is another guy who showed some pretty big stuff this summer, but hasn't thrown a ton of college innings. And Muddler, the catcher, backup mostly at Oklahoma, but he's a guy that should stick around pro ball at the very least for quite a while, at least in some role, if he doesn't end up getting the chance to do a little bit more, if he ends up getting a little bit more playing time.
Following up on that, Matt, how likely is it that any of these undrafted free agents could potentially crack the top 50 as of like a year from now?
That's really tough to see. I think the guys that would have the best chance are the two prep guys, Merritt and Carrero. I think with Merritt's MLB Draft League performance showing you how raw he is, that's an unrealistic expectation at this point. And Carrero probably being 2 years away from making much impact in the system, it's probably a little too aggressive to expect that from them.
Well, let's go ahead and we've talked almost about actually over for a full hour on this draft. Let's close out the show and let's do some really quick hit predictions. And Garrett, I want to go to you first. Which pick is your quote, plant your flag guy, the one you believe in the most, even if the consensus doesn't?
Well, I did mention Lovash as a guy that I really like. I think he's going to be a lot better in as a pro than in college. And then I guess I'll go with Alex Lodis. He was a guy that I really targeted before the draft as one that I really like. I think Lodis is a guy that, I mean, he was a second round pick, got over $1 million. Hard to call him a plant your flag guy, but I really believe in Lodis. I think that was a great pick.
Who's your highest upside player in the class, regardless of floor? Let's just talk pure upside.
It's between Essenberg and Southazine. I would go Southazine just because of the defensive potential. You know, if he sticks it short, really taps into all of his power and hit tool, I think that he would be an overall more valuable guy than Essenberg, even though Essenberg has the higher ceiling offensively.
And then finally, which pick do you have the most questions about? Whether it be from a developmental standpoint, from fit, who gave you the biggest question mark?
I mean, if you look at the top six guys, I think that they got a lot of guys that really fit for them. I guess I would go McKenzie just because, again, that's a lot of money for a prep pitcher, and prep pitchers get hurt a lot. I mean, all pitchers get hurt a lot, but especially prep guys get hurt a lot. So I think that's definitely the one that you would have the biggest question of is if he gets hurt very early on, this draft looks a lot different.
All right, Matt, your turn. Who is your plant your flag guy?
I gotta go with Southazine. I mean, I just like everything about him as a player. I think that he wasn't necessarily the number one guy on my board personally when the Braves were on the clock, but to be able to get a guy like that who I still had a first round grade on and still save the money that they did, I think he's gonna develop into a very good player. I gotta go with him.
Who's your highest upside player?
I'm gonna have to say it's Riggs. I think that what you're seeing with him is a potential top of the rotation starter if everything works out perfectly for him. I don't really see that most like as the most likely outcome, but I think just having that potential number one or more likely number two starter gives him the highest upside.
Finally, which pick do you have the most questions about?
Honestly, in terms of the high picks, none. The first group of picks, I liked every single pick, so I don't really have questions. If I had to come up with a name, it would probably be Briggs just because of the amount of money he got, just like Garrett said. But in terms of the players that they took, I don't really have any real questions.
Well, Matt, Garrett, thank you for all of that. Asked you guys a ton of questions and again, some great feedback. As for all of you, that's a wrap on our 2025 MLB draft breakdown here on Peach State Prospects, a big, bold draft for the Braves. We'll be tracking these guys, of course, throughout their career. If you like this breakdown, hit that follow button, leave us a rating, and let us know which pick you're most excited about. Until next time, keep watching the farm, and we'll keep bringing the heat.